This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
This morning, I want to hear about your memorable hiking trips. What made them special? Is it having a trek over multiple days? Is it having a spiritual element to it? Have you in fact walked the iconic Camino pilgrimage trails in southern Europe? Because we are on the verge of having Camino on the Yarra. Have you heard about this? Yes, in this conversation hour, we're talking about the plans for a 13-day hiking trail along the length of the Yarra River, all the way from Williamstown Beach to the lip of the Upper Yarra Dam. It's being promoted as our answer to the Camino. What do you think? Would you do it? Have you done the Camino way? And how would it compare? So this has been planned with the cooperation of First Nations people, so there's already the possibility of a fantastic spiritual dimension to this. Tell me, what have you felt if you have been on those trails that you remember the most? What has it been about those trips that have made them memorable? Have you walked the Camino itself, one of the many ways that you can do that into Spain? How would this compare here in the heart of our Melbourne city? What makes a good hiking trail? Even a hiking pilgrimage? Tell me your stories. Also this hour, I'm asking you, if you're a man out there, are you still bad at talking about your health? Is that a cliche? Or are there still barriers for men opening up? The Cancer Council says men are 20% more likely to be diagnosed with cancer than women. And they are making the link. They're calling for men to open up about their health. They're making that link between talking about health and detecting cancer. What's your story or a story of a loved one? Do you think it's still true that men aren't open about their health? What has it meant for you? Has your openness changed over the years? Or someone that you know and love, have they had problems opening up, and what's helped them? What's stopping them from opening up? Tell me about your experiences, if you're a man or if you know and love one. Also, a special treat, we're going to catch up with Vicar and Linda after their ARIA Hall of Fame induction. Ugh. They're fantastic. They've been in our lives for about four decades now. Tell me, where have you seen them live? Tell us your pick of Vicar and Linda songs or albums. Ring us and join us in conversation. But next, you've heard the news breaking this morning of a deal between Iran and the US. There are not a lot of granular details yet, but we will ask the question and hopefully get some answer. What does it mean for us at the Bowser?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So, yes, that agreement, we understand that it's going to be signed in Geneva on Friday, but that's about it. A lot of the details remain very unclear, including the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz and how that will happen. There's a lot of spin from both Washington and Tehran this morning, but not a lot of details. So what can we expect? Tony Wood is Senior Fellow of the Energy Program at Grattan Institute and joins us today. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Good morning, Mary.
Let's get to what people possibly, the first thought that came to them, or one of the first, when they heard this morning. What does it mean for us at the Bowser as it stands today?
Well, I think the moment, it means very little to start with. I mean, clearly, these prices that I've been overseas do flow through, and they've been moving up and down all over the place. This one seems to be different. I think it's the 38th or 39th time we've heard either side talk about peace breaking out. But this one seems to have some credibility because both sides have said, yes, we've got the basis of the deal here. What's going to drive it, whether it turns out to be successful or not, isn't whether or not they've got the basis for a deal. It's whether or not one party just annoys the other one so much by saying, well, we won and you lost. Both sides have to see that they've at least survived and hopefully can claim some credit for moving beyond the skirmishes of what's been so devastating for the rest of the world to into something that actually then can be survivable, and then all the other things that flow from that. So that's going to take out a little while yet. And of course, we have the excise issue in Australia as well, which is also going to have an impact in the next couple of months.
Well, that's right. So that excise is due to expire on June the 30th, just in a couple of weeks, and the government has given a lot of indication that it's not going to extend it beyond that point. So this apparent deal on the table, if it holds those 2 weeks, will probably mean that the government has more reason to say, look, that there's a reason to not stick with this excise cut. What does it mean for us in those prices post June 30, if indeed the fuel excise cut does disappear?
Well, given what we just talked about, it seems likely that if the safe settlement opens shortly, let's say in the next couple of weeks, it's going to take quite some time to rebuild global stocks of fuel, and that's going to mean that prices are not going to come down quickly, including in Australia. So that'll take a while. In the meantime, you know, the government reduced excise, halved the excise on petrol a few months ago. That will run out. So most likely, we'll see an increase in petrol prices from the 1st of July, even though it sounds a bit counterintuitive that we've got a peace deal being sorted out, but prices are going to go up. Well, that's just the nature of the two somewhat independent factors. The excise change was made because the government was looking to support Australians through a difficult period. That support is now going to be removed. And I think you're right. The argument will be, well, we don't need it anymore. And it was many people would argue, including myself, that it wasn't necessarily the most targeted of things we could have done. So that means most likely we'll see an increase in Bowser prices. But of course, we will see, I think, a fair bit of the volatility in prices. The good news is that volatility in prices, ups and downs every week almost, that should start to flatten out if this deal actually does stick.
You're listening to Tony Wood from the Grattan Institute. We're talking about the flow-on effects, if they are flowing on indeed, from the deal that has been announced this morning. As we say, there are no great details about the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. How are Australian importers going to assess then this 60-day negotiation period ahead, and what will they be looking for when it comes to the details about the Hormuz Strait?
Well, if you're buying, and the companies we're talking about who import the petrol, diesel and aviation fuel that we need from various parts of the world, and they've been sourcing that from a much wider range of sources than they did historically, when they enter a deal, they either buy individual shipments or sometimes they enter into a contract which might last multiple shipments. What they're going to be nervous about, both sides, is, well, I don't want to buy fuel when the oil price is, let's call it, $100 a barrel, and then find that when it gets to Australia, the price has dropped to $75 a barrel. That's, the government was trying to underwrite that to ensure that companies could still proceed in confidence. So that's the sort of thing that companies are going to be trying to work out, is when do I, at what price level can I be confident that if I enter into a deal to buy fuel, I'll be able to at least make a normal profit when that fuel arrives in Australia. And so they're going to have to be looking at, well, where is it moving? How quickly is it moving? And when do I... They could make a lot of money, but they could also lose a lot of money. And so the challenge for them is to do that. And the role of the government might still be to sit behind that, to make sure that companies have the confidence to know that they're not going to... The government will be there if they, in good faith, enter into supply agreements to ensure we do have the fuel, but find themselves on the wrong side of the prices. Now, that, if we do that, it should be very limited. But it's going to be a tricky issue, I think, for a little while yet, because it's very hard to predict how quickly this is going to change and what sort of, you know, how quickly the price volatility should settle down, because prices moving from, you know, $80 a barrel to $120 a barrel is just unmanageable. And so that's what we've got to see hopefully settle down.
And a final quick question to you, Tony. Let's say all of this is real, all of this is immediate, the Strait of Hormuz opens. In the best possible circumstances from here, even if that happened, when would prices start to drop here in Victoria, Australia?
Well, putting aside the excise issue, I think it's going to be a couple of months, to be honest, and see how quickly those supply chains work out. At the same time, we need to think, as the government already is, what do we do beyond that? Let's not waste this crisis. Let's plan for a future when we don't depend so much on those international supply chains in a country that's so far from where those supply chains originate.
Tony Wood, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Mary.
With so much still unknown, it's always great to hear from the experts just to get our expectations in check. Tony Wood is from the Grattan Institute. You're on The Conversation Hour, and I am also asking you today what has made your big hiking trails memorable. We're going to have Camino on the Yarra. That's how it's being promoted. Something that could potentially be mentioned in the same breath as the Camino Way. I'm asking you, have you walked that? What have you found? Helen, in Rye, have you walked the Camino Trail?
Yes, I did it in 2014. In 2013, my father, whose name was Patrick John, died, and I did it in honour of him. And I spent 19 days doing it, and I the plan was to walk for a week, and there was lots of amazing things that happened, but this particular one was life-changing. I got to a town after 20 kilometres and I was quite spent. I'd walked the first week and bought a bike for the second week. And I was on the bike, I got off, needed to find somewhere to stay. The whole town was deserted and there were two men standing on a corner reading a map, and I said, "Oh, are you on the Camino?" They said yes. And I introduced myself, and then they introduced themselves. They're both French, and one said, "I'm Patrick," and he's John. And I've been friends with them ever since.
Oh.
They changed my life. I've learnt French since then. I've been back four times. I've had French students. I speak French. I learned it in 6 months because I wanted to be able to speak more with Patrick.
And, how long ago was this again, Helen?
2014. That was just one of the many miracles that happened for me, but that particular one, yeah, was amazing.
Oh, Helen, what a terrific story. So you're still in touch with Patrick and John?
Yeah, John just came and stayed a couple of months ago, and I've stayed with him. I got quite close to his mother as well, who recently died, but I also did it in honour of my sister, Teresa, and his mother's name was Teresa, and the first person I walked with was born on the same day as my sister, who had died. So, yeah, it's just
shivers, Helen. I'm getting shivers. Yeah. Would you take Patrick, if he comes out here, and take him along the Yarra?
John, I would. Patrick has embedded himself into a forest and he stays there and doesn't have email or phones. But John, yes, he'd love it. Unfortunately, I didn't know about it when he was here, but otherwise I would love to go.
Well, it's yet to come. It's yet to come, Helen. Yes. Stay listening, and everyone's going to be hearing about the plans for it to happen on the Yarra. Helen, thank you for giving us a story. I've heard that Camino can be life-changing and miraculous, and that just about sums it up. Lisa in Castlemaine, you've done the Camino as well?
Yes, I did it 10 years ago for my 50th with our three children. Mm. When I said I wanted to walk the Camino, they were 15, 16 and 23, and they were just so angry. They were like, "Why do we have to walk hundreds of kilometres? Normal people just go to a resort." And it took them a while to convince them, but then they just loved it. It was the best thing. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Oh,
like if you,
what did you like about it?
Like walking.
What was so good?
The slow pace. We were in no hurry. A lot of people are in a hurry. And it was a holiday for us. It was not a race or, you know, how fast we can do it. It was just a beautiful holiday. And we meandered. We made our own walking sticks out of sticks that we found in the forest. And we, you know, whittled them into shapes. And we'd have a G&T at 5 o'clock. And then we'd look for somewhere to sleep. We didn't book any accommodation at all.
And you found it anyway. So
we
Lisa,
found it anyway.
So, Lisa, do you think that we can have Camino along the Yarra? What do you think would be...
I think it would be a totally different experience,
yeah.
But I think walking holidays are just the best. And if you haven't done one, I think it would be absolutely amazing.
Maybe you can take your young adult children now.
Well, yes, now they're 25, 26 and 33, but they loved it.
Terrific.
It's amazing.
Lisa, thank you. All these stories, it is definitely on my list of things to do, and you're bringing it higher into the list, both Helen and Lisa. Tell me if you have done it as well, like Helen and Lisa, 1300 222 774. Have you walked the Camino? And also, would we be able to recreate any part or even a shadow of that experience along the Yarra? Could we do it even better? These are the plans coming up. We'll talk about those next.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So, have you heard about the 13-day hiking trail being planned along the length of the Yarra? It's being promoted as Victoria's answer to the Camino, which we've been hearing about, that legendary pilgrimage walk in southern Europe that all ends up in Spain. Chris Chesterfield is one of the many people behind these plans. He's a director on the board of Birrarung Valley Walk, and he joins me now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Mary.
How long has this been in the offing?
Well, it's been 4 years of work by so many people, and it's just today the announcement's been made about the formal alignment of the trail over 220 kilometres of the Burrung corridor. And yeah, I'm at an event here with about 80 people. We've got the mayors, councillors, elders from Wurundjeri.
Yeah,
all just part of this. All of just part of this announcement.
Absolutely, and we want to speak to a couple of people who are there.
Yes.
to look at the various aspects of it. But you talk about making sure that it is all linked. You also have a background in talking about sustainable development. How much work needs to be done on this trail before it becomes a 13-day walking trail?
Oh, there's a couple of sections that are not completely connected yet. You know, there's about 5 kilometres or so of trail that probably still need to be developed. But there's been an investment over decades in establishing a public open space corridor along many parts of the river. And so many people would already be familiar with many of those parts of the river. Through, you know, Templestowe, Warrandyte, through Kew and so on. A lot of it is accessible now, but there's no wayfinding. It can be really difficult to navigate your way through, and, of course, you can't do that continuously all the way up to the headwaters of Upper Yarra Reservoir.
Mm. And so part of this is indeed to improve the health of the Yarra. Is that the case, that this trail might be a part of a push to actually improve the health of the Yarra?
Yeah, the more people who get to experience the river and know the river, more people will advocate for the protection and for maintaining the health of the river. There's been so much that's been done over the past few decades in improving water quality and doing those sorts of things, but there's still a long way to go.
You're listening to Chris Chesterfield. We're talking about the plan to make a 13-day hiking trail along the length of the Yarra that's going to be our answer to the Camino. I'm asking you about what makes a memorable hiking trip, and if you've been on the Camino, one of the things that we should be potentially replicating. 1300 222 774. We have been talking about the number of people who do go on the Camino as well, that famous pilgrimage. What would be part of the plans, Chris, to protect as well the Yarra? If this really takes off, you know, you'll have many tourists. I know that that's the chatter around Camino, how you actually preserve those roads and towns and make sure that it is sustainable.
Well, it'll be a fantastic opportunity, I think, to really engage the traditional custodians or Wurundjeri as caretakers along the corridor as well, and that's an opportunity that they're really enthusiastic about. But just bringing people into that corridor will, you know, help identify where there are issues, you know, where there's you know, the need for enhancing not just people's experiences but for enhancing the corridor for biodiversity and so on.
I want to get to the First Nations aspect of this as well, the spiritual aspect that many people talk about with Camino, and we're going to get to that soon. But
indeed,
the other, you know, more superficial part of the attraction with the Camino is at the end of the day, you relax, you might have a nice place to stay, a nice bit of food to eat. Is that part integral to the plans, Chris?
Yeah, indeed. So the wayfinding app to be developed will help people connect with those opportunities, whether it's for accommodation, for meals and so on. And hopefully over time we'll find, you know, the villages and townships along the way investing more in supporting people in undertaking that walk and really enhancing that experience for them.
Chris Chesterfield, thank you for talking with us today.
Thanks, Mary.
Chris Chesterfield is a director on the board of Burrung Valley Walk. And Wurundjeri Elder Auntie Julianne Axford from Wurundjeri Woiwurrung Aboriginal Heritage Corporation is joining me now. And you've been part of these plans as well, Auntie Julianne.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. And how How much are you looking forward, I guess, to this idea of people joining this trail and learning about the First Nations stories?
I'm actually really looking forward to it. I think it'll be a great education for people to understand our culture and how our elders survived living on the land.
Has the First Nations voices, particularly, I guess, from the corporation you're involved with, been involved right from the get-go?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
What have been the things that you've fed back to the organisers of this, the people behind these plans, as being the most important part of designing this trail?
I think just learning about how our elders lived on the country, how to look after country. You know, yeah, respecting it. Yeah, just looking after country.
Will there be any First Nations people leaning into that trail? So, for instance, people who can teach people who are walking the trail?
Yeah, if there's people that, yeah, there is staff at our Wurundjeri Corporation that could do talks and things like that along the walks, definitely.
Auntie Julianne, how important is the Yarra to the First Nations people here?
It's very important. It was a, you know, place where we lived, we celebrated, we did law, like, you know, that was our law, living here. It was our medicines. It was a very important place to, not just for Wurundjeri, but to other mobs as well.
We've been talking about this comparison that's been made, potentially just for marketing purposes, but between this trail and the Camino Way. But we've already heard from listeners about the quite spiritual experiences that they've had on the Camino Way in Europe. Do you believe that people of all backgrounds will be able to access the spirituality of the Yarra?
I think so, yes.
Why are you so certain?
I think it's just a matter of if you really take your time and you listen, you will see things and you will hear things in spiritual ways. Yeah, definitely.
Auntie Julianne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Auntie Julianne Axford, who's a Wurundjeri elder and part of the corporation that's been part of these plans. And Bruce Parncutt is chair of the Birrarung Valley Walk, and he joins us as well. Hi, Bruce. How developed are these plans?
Well, it's a very good question. I think what we're announcing today is that we've reached agreement with 9 local government councils, 3 state government agencies, and the 2 Aboriginal organisations. The agreement is to agree which way, where the path will go through their lands. So we're a long way from actually having a walking trail. There's work to be done. There's some places where we want to connect existing trails to other trails to make a continuous walk. There's some access required on some Melbourne Water and some Park Victoria land, where there's still some work to do with them to agree exactly how that access will occur. So we don't have a walking path today, but we have an amazingly powerful agreement.
Yes, that's right.
From a lot of people.
So scheduled to open in 2029, is that right?
That's a guess.
That's a guess. All right.
We've got some work to do. We've got some money to raise. I don't think it's an expensive exercise. I think this should be something that governments and councils will agree to do. We're a not-for-profit, so we will raise some philanthropic money as well towards the creation of this walk.
This on text, Bruce. A trail will need signage, toilets and facilities and accommodation options if the trail is promoted as a multi-day hike. That also will take a lot of doing as well. And there'll be you'll be dealing with many different voices when you're dealing with many different councils.
We will be. There's no doubt there's some work ahead, but what we do have is a very strong coalition of commitment to this project because basically of the well-being it'll bring to the community.
How many people are you working into your plans as potentially making this trail?
That's a very good question. I can't give you the numbers off my head, but we have actually had some economic assessment done, and it talks about, I think by year 10, perhaps having 250,000 people walking some part of the trail. I'm not sure everyone's going to walk end to end, but quite a few of those people are walking this already in some parts. So our contribution to that, they're estimating it maybe an additional 50,000 of that. So we're already quite a few people walking parts of the Yarra.
Well, indeed. But if you've got something organised like that, might it potentially end up being restricted or, you know, or in any way to preserve the Yarra as well? Or is the preservation going to be built around those numbers?
I think it's possible there might be a registration of walkers in some parts or some parts of the trail, so that you would need to register, and that may some other trails around Australia do have restrictions on the number of people who walk. That's possible.
You'd hope not,
but that's possible.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Well, that's a good problem to have in a way, unless it's, of course, threatening the Yarra. Bruce Pankut is with you. We're talking about these plans, which are in the future, which will come to pass potentially in 2029, of something like a Camino-like walk in Yarra. It's on along the Yarra itself. You've made the choice to compare it to the Camino as well. We were just talking then to Auntie Julianne. How much of the marketing will be tied to the spirituality, potentially when it comes to the link with First Nations people, Bruce?
That's an interesting question. I part of this was stimulated by me walking the Camino myself about 12 years ago.
All right. And
I came to chat with my very close friend, Morty Palmer, who sadly passed away last year, but we effectively labelled her the founder of this project. She was working on a spiritual pathway, a shorter pathway along the Yarra, a cultural pathway. And I'd said to her, well, I've just walked the Camino, I think, and I'd started looking for how I could walk the length of the Yarra and found that there was no such thing. There was no data, there was no information that would enable you to walk from one end of the valley to the other. And so our two projects merged, really.
Oh, that's interesting. What was your Camino walk like? Was it as kind of shiver-inducing as we've heard from some listeners this morning?
Look, I think it can be life-changing. I think I did the different parts of the Camino. I did a 770-kilometre piece from France across into, I suppose it's western Spain.
Mm.
And I think the spirituality is just the time you spend on your own in beautiful surroundings thinking about life.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll have a similar impact with this walk.
Absolutely.
The added thing, I've walked this the length of the Yarra with my colleague founder, Nicola Lefroy, the CEO of Birrarung Valley Walk, several years ago. And one of the most powerful parts of it was when you, because you don't always walk alongside the river, the pathway will go away from the river. When you come back to the river and you hear this babbling stream, there's something quite spiritual about the power of the water and that noise, that sound.
Mm.
I think there's something special for people to experience in taking when they come to take this journey.
Well, Bruce, I've already got a text saying it's exciting. I want to do it if I can. So you've already got some people intrigued. We'll be watching those plans over the years.
Fantastic.
Thank you for joining us, Bruce.
Thank you for talking to us.
That's Bruce Pankut, who's chair of the Birrarung Valley Walk. Bruce found some inspiration there from the water along the Camino Way. I'm asking you what makes a great hiking trail, 1300 222 774. Julie, in Echuca, is it? Have you walked the Camino?
Yes, I have. I've walked the Camino, the Way of St James, and I've also walked the Portuguese Camino, which goes through Portugal and ends up at the Compostela as well.
Ah, so you've gone back for more. Why?
Oh, it's just amazing. I like obviously the spirituality of the walking. I've walked a lot of the Australian ones as well, the Hyson Trail, the Larapinta Trail, Crail Mountain, and I would just love to do a Yarra River one.
Yeah.
Especially if there was a bit of Indigenous input in it as well.
I know, I can see on text as well, Julie, that is important to people. And so will you go back for the Camino, or are you going to wait for the Yarra?
No, well, there's lots of walks in the world.
Lots of walks.
And I could do, yeah. I've done one in Nepal and also the Great Wall of China. And
how do you choose them, Julie? What makes a great walk for you?
Well, some are different. Some are with a different culture, which is really interesting. That's why I'd like to do the Yarra Valley one, Yarra River one.
Sounds like you're walking now, Julie.
I am, yes, sorry.
No, all good.
The channel when I'm walking in the mornings.
Excellent. I love it. I'm not sure if we're going to deliver the spiritual content for everyone, Julie, but thank you for joining us on your walk. Like Julie, there are many people who have been going hundreds of kilometres, so pardon me for calling it a walk. It's more than that, isn't it? Tamara has says, I've done the Aussie Camino. It follows the life of Mary MacKillop. You walk from Portland to Panola. Thank you for that. I didn't know about that. This, I love hiking from Mount St. Guinier to Mount Baw-Baw and return. It's very much a spiritual experience for me at any time of year. Mount Baw-Baw has cafes and accommodation too. And in winter, I used to do it on skis when I was younger. Keep those calls and texts coming about those long walks and what makes a really great walk for you. Also, tell me, have you seen Vicar and Linda live? Tell me your top Vicar and Linda stories. We'll be going to be chatting to those magnificent, iconic songbirds just days after their ARIA Hall of Fame induction. But coming up next, are men still not opening up about their health and increasing their risk of cancer as a result?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So what is stopping men from talking about their health, if that is true for you? 1300 222 774, or maybe it's not. Tell me if that's a cliche. Tell me if you've changed over the years, and if so, why? What's helped you change your openness with your loved ones or with medical practitioners? Maybe you're not a man, but you know one, you love one. Tell me what you think as well. Because the Victorian Cancer Registry has found that for every 100 women diagnosed with cancer, 122 men will be diagnosed, and the cancer risk for men increases, of course, with age. The Cancer Council has therefore said men need to open up. They've made that link. Joining me now is Craig Sinclair, who's Head of Prevention and Adjunct Associate Professor. Thank you for joining me, Craig.
Thanks, Mary. Great to talk.
First off, we'll get to the numbers and so forth, but why have you made this link to men opening up? What's the evidence that you still have that men are not opening up and that that leads to poor health outcomes?
Yeah, look, we see it very much in their men's participation or lack of participation compared to women in screening and early detection programs. So just to give you some examples, like men are twice as likely to die from melanoma than women, in particularly in those regional areas. We find with bowel cancer screening, men are far less likely to participate in those screening programs compared to women. So there's something going on, and look, it's impossible to tell exactly what that is, but I think it's partly that men are less likely to talk amongst their mates about their health. They have a probably a bit more she'll be right kind of attitude. And then that combines with them less willing to engage in those prevention and early detection interventions, which we know can really be important in getting these cancers early and indeed saving lives.
Craig, you're a man of medicine, of course, but you are a man. What's your insight into that, whether it comes from talking to people in your life or through your work? What do you think is going on? You're talking about not being willing to open up. Many of us would have thought, look, we're past that in 2026. What's going on?
Yeah, look, it's still very current, I think, in terms of my own male friendship networks. It's not something that we, and I work in the health area, It's not often that we sort of get together and talk about our health or what our experience was when we went to the doctor last time. I mean, obviously, when there are serious concerns, we do open up. But from what I understand, there are very different conversations that are going on when we talk about our own health, particularly compared to women when they talk about their own health. And part of this is, I know in terms from a screening perspective, women have for decades been engaging in cervical screening and breast cancer screening, where they've had to make real commitments in their day to go and see their doctor or participate in a mammogram, where men haven't had to have that sort of intervention laid out. We're now, bowel cancer screening is now a common screening program, and they're only just starting to learn that screening is important. And unfortunately, only about 40% of men are participating in these national bowel cancer screening programs.
Even the ones that are delivered straight to their door.
Exactly. And that's the really strange thing, where you think about what women go through when they have having a cervical screening test, and actually having to make a doctor's appointment and really make a commitment in their day to participate in that screening. And now we've got the bowel cancer hit literally arriving in their door, and still there's that reluctance to participate. And I can't really break down what that is, but I think that she'll be right, I'm okay. That denial that their health is going to be at risk is still, I think, very prominent in their thinking.
Mm. You're listening to The Conversation Hour. We're talking about men opening up in order to get quickly onto those particularly cancer diagnoses. Richard in Ballarat, what's your story?
Well, I'll give you the short story first. I have non-curable prostate cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard.
It's treatable, and I'll see my oncologist on Wednesday and see how much further down my PSA has gone. But
how are you going?
I'm fine. I can't lift. I can't do any heavy lifting, which is really difficult because I'm a CFA volunteer. Mm. And that means things like, you know, water hoses and things like that. We had a fire on Saturday, and because I was just running around, there were a couple of guys standing around who I know from different brigades, and I said, right, do you know what your PSA level is?
Yeah.
And one of the young guys said, I'm 23, I don't need to know about that.
Mm-hmm. What'd you
and
say
I
to him?
I said, well, yes, you do, otherwise you'll end up like me. And then I told them what had happened to me, and their mouths hit the ground. And I said, you must go and check it, because if it starts to rise, it's now treatable with things other than surgery, which was always going to be a problem with incontinence and impotence and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, Richard, but, so that's really motivating you. What great work you're doing, actually putting your story out there to people.
Well, so far it's been fairly limited, but these two guys I was talking to, I've come across them in the firefighting stuff that I've done, and really their jaws hit the ground when they went, oh, and they've got to have a baseline.
Yeah.
So every bloke listening now, I know we were talking about women and cervical cancer and breast cancer, but you've got to have a baseline. Got to have a baseline so that if it goes up, you can go, right, what are the options?
Richard, I can't thank you enough for calling up and sharing your story and also sharing that message. And I'm sure Craig, who's listening on, will agree. Thank you. And really, best of luck with all of your treatment.
Thank you. And thank you. I'll see the oncologist on Wednesday. I might just ring you up again.
Oh, please do. Please do. I'd love to hear, Richard.
Okay. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Richard. Paul in Ringwood East, what's yours? What would you want to say to us, Paul?
Hi, Mary. That was an amazing conversation with Richard. Yeah. I've just come from the doctors for a checkup. I had a spot that was causing some concern. My Mary at home said, please go and do it. We've only just started to talk about the prospect of retirement. And it occurred to me that if something happens, like so much of what I care about for 24 hours a day is just not important. Like,
yeah,
if you don't have your health, you don't have your wealth, you don't have anything.
So, Paul, do you think it was that retirement makes you start thinking about it, even if you should have been started to think earlier?
No, not really. I think when you get to sort of into your 50s, lots of stuff starts popping up on your skin. They're called seborrheic keratoses. They're called wisdom warts. I call them cocoa pops. And they scratch off, and you've got to be careful with them.
Yeah.
And it just pays to get it checked.
Paul,
no dramas at all.
Paul, thank you, like Richard, for calling up and giving a really first-hand kick to a lot of people who might be listening. Craig, we'll have to let you go, but what do you think of people like Richard and Paul and sharing their stories? Is that the key?
Yeah, look, the key message, and if I can leave, you know, one message for all people, particularly men in our audience, is making that commitment to at least once a year booking a time with your family GP for a preventative health check. And, you know, allow half an hour, give your doctor plenty of time, and then you can actually have a conversation with him or her to really make sure you're covering all your bases. And I think, you know, both Richard and Paul's stories are very pertinent to the importance of prevention and getting in early. So that once a year preventative health check with your doctor is really something they can do right now.
Craig, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Mary. Take care.
Craig is Adjunct Associate Professor, Head of Prevention at the Cancer Council. You're listening to The Conversation Hour, and I want to get to more of your texts and calls about men's health and about walking and what you get from those long hikes. But next, we are talking to one of Australia's most loved musical acts, Vicar and Linda Bull. Tell me your best stories of seeing Vicar and Linda. That's coming up next.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Please join me in welcoming the most magnificent Vicar and Linda Bull into the ARIA Hall of Fame.
Call me Coca-Cola.
That was Julie Zaniro inducting Vicar and Linda Bull at last into the ARIA Hall of Fame. So they're fresh from that, but after 4 decades in the industry, they're still showing no signs of slowing down. They've got a new album and they join me now. Thank you so much for joining me, Vicar and Linda.
Hello, Mary.
Hello. Tell me, what did either of you think with that induction? What were you thinking as you walked up on stage, Vicar?
Mary, Julia just gave us the most beautiful induction, and it was so heartfelt, and it was really lovely to have her do that for us because we have had a very close association working in Rockwiz. But walking up to that stage, I was very emotional, actually. I was like, oh, it was all a bit much.
What made you emotional? What was the thought that made you emotional?
I think it's the fact that we have been in this industry for over 40 years, and having my family there and being with Linda and doing it with Linda for so long, and that our relationship hasn't broken down, I think, you know, that strength, that was why I was very emotional.
Linda, did you think the same thing?
I did, Mary. I was the same. When Julia was, and all the people in the package, like Paul Kelly, Neil Finn, Casey Chambers, Mark Seymour, when they say beautiful things about you, and Joe Camilleri, of course, it makes a sort of knot in your throat, and you just start, you don't want to cry, but it's a realisation that all these friendships you've made over the years and that have lasted, that they mean something to you, and the work has meant something, and to be there with Vicar was exactly the same. I was a bit overwhelmed. I didn't want to cry, but I did.
But you did anyway, and no one would blame you. I guess there's also something about Hall of Fame. You say that and you go, oh, that's for the past players, you know, the Hall of Fame. But you just keep going. You've just released a new album. Apparently it's the most more personal than ever. Do you feel any pressure to honour not just the past of all the things that you've gone through, but your own past, your own musical history? Or is the challenge to keep it going, to keep fresh? How do you approach that?
Good question. It is to keep going, to keep fresh. I think Chris Cheney said it very well on the night, you know, that they don't look back, they always look forward, and that's the same with us. It's like we do honour the past, but we have to keep writing and singing new songs and you know, because we are doing a lot more songwriting now, it's like our story keeps changing. So, you know, it's important. It's important to keep things fresh, Mary.
Yeah, absolutely. Where Do You Come From is the title of the new album. 1300 222 774, if you'd like to share watching Vicar and Linda live, or what your picks are from their many eras. Linda, I think that you both have said that you refuse to keep singing the same songs. You wanted them to become more creative. What do you think that you both have gained artistically that you didn't have when you were younger?
I think confidence. I think creativity, it can bloom at any point in your life, and you often see people say, I never knew I could paint, or I never knew I could, you know, do that. I think that that's taught us that you just let it flow when it's ready. Forcing it is a big, probably no-no. I think you just let it go when it's ready to come out.
Vicar, what are those things that make it flow for you?
Oh, Lots of things. Swimming, yes. Getting in the ocean and feeling cold water on your skin and nature and things like that. More so now, you know, as we're aging, you know, having a lot more appreciation for that and the earth and things like that. We often spend a lot of time down at Phillip Island with our parents and you know, go on walks and things like that. So, yeah, very much so. It's nature for me.
Nature. And Linda, for you?
I agree with Vicar. I think that's been the surprising thing about being on the road. You're just sort of bombarded by attention and fast-moving lifestyle. So, and that's once you've made a record, that's what when you deliver it. But in order to be creative, I think you have to stop and slow down. I mean, that's just me. A lot of creative people get inspired at 3 a.m. After they've gotten home. For me, it's the quieter moment.
The quieter moments. You've got a new album, Where Do You Come From? As I said, it's been described as probably your most personal story. It deals with ancestry, belonging and identity and ageing as well. Vika, why do you think that we still struggle with this concept? How have you attacked it as a concept, this idea of ageing as women?
I've embraced it, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I really
Which bit is the best?
Absolutely everything. I mean, you know, I struggled a bit, you know, with menopause and things like that, but I've overcome that now and I'm healthier and stronger and better and realise that I have to take very good care of myself. But I really am, I'm loving this age. I'm loving the fact that, you know, I don't really give two tosses about a lot of stuff that I used to, you know. I won't be having Botox or anything like that. I mean, I'm all for women that love it, but I'm just going to embrace my wrinkles and my grey hair and all that. I'm just going to sit in the ocean and have fun.
You're making the same declaration, Linda?
I'm not. So you'll have lovely brown hair until we're 90 and I'll have the grey.
We're very different, Mary.
I can tell. I love it because you're basically embracing the whole each to their own in your exactly. in your relationship. Rosemary in Sandringham, you recently saw Vicar and Linda.
Yes, I went on Saturday night with my sister and watched the support actress, who was very good. She had a lovely voice, Rats. And then, I've seen Vicar and Linda before. My favourite time, a concert was when Vicar did the Etta James story. I actually saw that twice in two different venues, and it was just amazing. And what I love about Vicar and Linda is they talk about their songs, they explain them, so you actually get to know the why about the songs, and it gives it so much more meaning. You can relate.
The storytelling.
Fantastic.
How do you feel about that, Vicar and Linda?
Oh, that is beautiful, Rosemary. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming to the show. And we're so glad that you said that because we worry that we talk too much.
Rosemary doesn't think so, though. Leonie in Essendon, you've seen them for the first time. Is that right?
No, I was just recollecting the first time I saw Linda, which was way back in the, I think, early 90s. They were backing Black Sorrows at a small pub out in Gippsland somewhere. And I remember seeing them as backing vocalists and just blown away by their presence and their harmonies and the flowers in their hair. And I've had to follow them ever since. They're just amazing. Everything they do just, you know, knocks me out. And another memorable, I've seen them many times, but another memorable show was at the Peninsula Springs a few years ago and in such a beautiful setting. And, of course, you know, they, you know, did their usual, you know, wonderful show.
Yeah, the harmonies, you know, in a beautiful setting. Oh, Leonie.
Yeah, while swimming around, while wafting around in those, wallowing around in those pools and listening to them, that was great.
Leonie, I'm jealous. That sounds like it would have been amazing. Vika and Linda are still with me on the phone. They've just been inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame. Their new album is Where Do You Come From? And also here on text, I can see, Vika and Linda, so many people talking about seeing you at the recent Split Enz concert. I was there as well, just FYI.
Oh,
and, yeah, absolutely. And I was blown away by so many people embracing your new work as well. It was part of that storytelling thing that you do, that there were it was such a great venue, such a great time.
Well, Split Enz, they were our favourite act growing up. We weren't lying. So when we got the call to join them on their tour, we thought, oh my gosh, what else can go right this month? we were like thanking God, because it was just such an honour, and we learnt so much from them with growing up, watching them do their thing. So to open for them was a blast.
Yeah. So many people talking about the harmony. So I have to ask you about that. I know that people ask you about it all the time. Not just your being in sync vocally, but also being in sync when you just said in this interview, you're very different people. You still haven't driven each other mad. You know, has it ever come close, and how long are you going to keep performing together?
Well, hopefully forever, Mary. Hopefully, like, until we die, we hope to keep singing together. I think we're stronger in our partnership with the harmony. That's the whole thing. We were taught to sing in harmony when we were very little by our mother, and so it comes very naturally. And the Tongans being great harmonisers and powerful singers themselves, I think that it's in our DNA. So, yeah, we have nearly split up a few times, but we're still here, and hopefully, and we get along better now. We've grown up. It's like give and take.
Oh, I hope you do go forever, and I'm getting so much love for you on text. Vika and Linda Bull, thank you so much for joining us on the Conversation Hour.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you so much, Mary, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Conversation Hour. You can find it again on the ABC Listen app. Have a wonderful day out there. Take care.